Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
Boom! What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a great day. The Doug Gottlieb Show is broadcast live from sunny Southern California. This show is brought to you by our favorite city, Las Vegas, the greatest arena on earth. Plan your trip today at visitvegas.com. Vegas Raiders 3-0, right? And if you, by the way, if you doubt the power of Vegas, now it still exists. Anybody else realize kind of what's in front of us here in Vegas? We are, just under 2 weeks out from Wilder Fury 3. We hope, right? No COVID issues. We think we hope. And of course the planning of let's have the Raiders be good just when they get fans back in the stands. And I don't know if they're great, but they're good. They're good. They got the Chargers on the road, then they'll have the Bears. I mean, think about that weekend. You can go and see Wilder Fury on a Saturday night and then Bears Raiders on a Sunday afternoon. By the way, Chargers, Monday Night Football next Monday. Nobody else knows this because I just found out I'm going. Taking my dude, we're going. All right, some wins. I understand that what happens when you coach or when you've been coached, you know some of these coaching expressions, right? Where a coach will tell you like, hey, you don't get any more points for style. You don't get any more wins if you win by 60 or if you win by one. It's still just one win. But thinking reasonably and logically, I got to tell you, there were three wins yesterday that jump out to me as being almost worth a win and a half. And each was in a different time slot. The Chargers beating the Chiefs on the road was a gigantic win. Keep in mind, they missed two extra points and still found a way to take down the Chiefs. And they just, you just got to exhale at the end of a game. Chargers were up 14-3 at the half, and frankly, it should have been more because the Chiefs had several turnovers. The Chiefs take a lead going into the fourth quarter, and usually that's where the Chargers would at least previously wither. They did not wither, and instead, they end up getting a gigantic, gigantic win. And it's one thing to go, hey, it's early in the season, and the Chiefs have been kind of all over the place. Andy Reid, by the way, his health, he's fine, released from the hospital today. Just got a little bit of a health scare. But keep in mind, this is a place in which they rarely win. In the last, like, decade, they've won two times. The other time was when they won 12 games 3 years ago. Having a second-year quarterback, a first-year coach, and taking the comeback from the Chiefs and still finding a way to win, that's like a win and a half. Because it, and yes, you go home scratching your head, do we have the right kicker? But you go home saying like, man, we won even though we gave away 2 points. Gave it away on 2 missed extra points. The other two, which I find to be really, really special wins, and I do think that Baltimore winning on the longest field goal in NFL history, that's a big, because you don't want to be the team that loses to the Lions. And Baltimore's been, two very different results going into yesterday's game. That was a game which you just survive and find a way. But, man, you're going to look back and go, thank goodness we have Justin Tucker. But the Rams beating Tampa in L.A., their first really big game in the new stadium with a viable opponent, a potential Super Bowl team, and with Tom Brady, and, you know, people will say that's Matt Stafford's biggest regular season game ever. I don't actually believe that to be true. He was on playoff teams. He played on plenty of big games. But that was a big one for the Rams on that biggest stage and for him to play that well and then to basically lead start to finish, and it wasn't really in question late into the fourth quarter. That was a big one. And then last night, I don't know what more you can say Aaron Rodgers was sharp. Everything he threw was on target. And yet, the Packers still couldn't score on their next to last two possessions, allowing the door just to be cracked open for San Francisco, who scored with 36 seconds to go, and that was enough to stop Aaron Rodgers. Two gigantic completions to Devontae Adams, and they make a 56-yard field goal, and you go running off thinking, well, we stole one that was almost stolen from us. It feels like those three wins are bigger than any other three wins this week. And while I understand in the standings it only counts for one and that you have to turn around and play somebody else is coming from you, and if you fall into the trap of believing what you saw this week is going to be the facts for the rest of the year, you're going to make a huge mistake. But these three teams, it feels different. The Packers have been to Florida twice and to California three times in the past couple years, and they've looked awful every time until last night. The Rams just didn't have confidence in Jared Goff's desire or ability to throw the ball downfield. Cooper Kupp's always been awesome. They added D-Jax, who it did feel like he was going to drop the ball before the end zone again. But they're cycling through running backs, through all these injuries, and they need to push the ball downfield, and they found a guy who will do it. I think Tyler Higbee helps, but I also think just having a quarterback that they believe opens up the entire field to them, and he played well. And he did so against a team that everybody respects, a quarterback everybody respects, and a defense that really got after Tom Brady. Really got after him. And then, of course, there's the Chargers win, which we've been telling you for the last 6 months. When healthy, one of the most talented teams in football. And they think, everybody thinks they got a dude in Justin Herbert, but how would he react in the second year? Right? Second year is sometimes tougher than first years because you're given a bigger playbook, more responsibilities, and you're only started for 1 year in the NFL. So far, so good. This is Aaron Rodgers talking about pulling off the big win.
Give some legitimacy to some of the things we've been talking about, that was kind of an aberration and that we are a talented football team. It felt like in the locker room today that we finally had the energy that I've been waiting to see. And before the game, it wasn't the type of energy we had in Jacksonville, but I knew we needed a spark. But the energy in the locker room post-game, that felt like a win. You know, it felt like there was such a growth moment for us, and I'm really, really happy for the guys to feel that. And, you know, it feels like, okay, now we're on our way. Now we can get into this. Now we know how to win, and we can get this thing moving in the right direction.
That's a win and a half. Right? When you have to win a football game twice, when you have that sort of energy, when everybody, aha, the aha moment, that's a win. That's a win and a half. And I think the Rams got that. I think the Chargers got that. It doesn't mean that they win this week and that they mollywop, but I do think that sometimes you can gain, you know, for the Rams, they led that thing almost tip to finish. I mean, that's an amount of confidence they can have. For the Packers, they were the better team and still nearly lost and found a way and were completely organized in their 2 minute. And he made a couple of incredible throws. They clocked it. They got the special teams on, and the field goal kicker made it. It looked like a practice. It was perfect. And for the Chargers to score when they scored, you know, the conversions that they got, and beating Kansas City in Kansas City, and really kind of challenging Kansas City, playing a lot of man, something that, you know, Gus Bradley would never do, but some of that was their personnel. I think there's a lot of growth there too. Those are wins. In a half.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
What up, Doug Gottlieb Show? Fox Sports Radio. I don't live my life by Twitter, but I'm going to use Twitter to kind of help me with part of this segment here. So, Buyer, could you do me a favor? I know you're really busy, so if you can, just go like, I can't, Doug. I actually have a job.
Okay. I am available at this second.
Okay. I tweeted out this video of Mario Cristobal lighting into one of his wide receivers who pretty close. It was a closer than should have been game against Arizona. And he caught a ball, I think, on third down. Would have put him into field goal range. Jumps up, spins the football. And, of course, that's a penalty in college football. and they get dinged 15 yards, and he comes over and gets a good old-fashioned chewing from Mario Cristobal. Have you seen that video?
Yes, yes, I have.
Okay. Do you have an opinion on it?
Not a strong one. Yeah. I think it's just coaching and Mario Cristobal trying to get his point across and how that sort of play can hurt the team in the most coach way possible.
Yes, yes. So if, for people who haven't seen the video, the kid comes running by him, and he's standing there waiting to be chewed on, right? Like, no, 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 don't go anywhere. And Cristobal turns around, and he's yelling at him, and he throws his headset down the ground. It spikes up, and the soft little covering of the mouthpiece kind of brushes against the kid, gets in his face, says a couple words, and then turns, and the kid just says, yes, sir, yes, sir. That's what it looked like he said. By the way, Oregon ends up kind of opening the game up in the fourth quarter and winning going away. They remain undefeated. They remain a top five team, having this fantastic season thus far. And so this is something that only gets mentioned and noticed a couple of days over. Rod Gilmore was doing the game, and he thought it was a little bit too much. A little bit too much. Or extra, as the kids like to say. I thought it was perfect coaching. I just did. I understand that in the real world, and we pull somebody aside and go, hey, man, listen, you know that catch you made when you spun the football? Could we not do that again? Would that be, can we not do that again? Would that be okay? Like, let's just not, right? Let's not spin the football. But when you're trying to actually make a point to other kids who are watching, I mean, that's part of the big issue is plenty of kids are watching. Right? Plenty of kids are watching. And I don't mean kids at home. I mean your players on the sideline. Those guys are watching. They want to see what you're doing and how you're handling it. And like, look, coaches, at some point you're gonna be pushed to an area where you're gonna either relent and give up on some of your values, or you're kind of going to dig in. And it felt like Cristobal chose to dig in, right? He chose to go in and, but it wasn't like one of these 20-minute long, just walking back and forth, chewing a kid up and down sort of deals. Like, that's not even close to what it felt like. Player's name is Chris Hudson, by the way. And it was a nice catch. I thought it was perfect. I thought he made his point known. He got into his face. He chewed on him. He probably told him, don't you ever do that again. And the kid said, yes, sir. And now we move on. But you have Rod Gilmore who's calling the game. He's like, a little bit too much. Now he's getting super defensive. Like, well, you have a 51-year-old white man yelling at a black kid and their parents won't like it. Like, okay, listen, here's the issue. First of all, Mario Cristobal is Cuban. I don't think he would identify himself as white. And it doesn't matter who your coach is. Coach is black, coach is white, coach is Cuban, coach is Asian, coach is Hispanic. If he's a head coach and he demands your respect and you make a mistake that I'm sure they have lectured on time and again in practice, that's the part that really upsets you, right? Time and again in practice. Hey, you get a first down, put the ball down, throw it to the ref, let's line up, let's do it again. Let's let the scoreboard do our talking. Let's get the scoreboard. And the only problem with the scoreboard when you're talking, I didn't tell you guys this. So we played in a basketball tournament over the weekend, and we lost in the championship game. We got beat by a good team, and they just made everything, and they were better than us, and they played better than us as well. We're a little out of gas. We played back-to-back games, semis, and we played really well in the semis. But in the first day, you play pool play, and my son was playing well. And, you know, kid's like, he's out at NBA range. He's like, shoot it. We're up 30 or 40. See, takes a quick three, shoots an air ball. And then the kid's still running his mouth to him, calling him trash. And my son's like, look at the scoreboard. Now, here's what. So I took him out of the game and I said, here's the problem. You can't talk trash when you shoot an air ball. Like, that's a rule. So, yeah, we're winning by 40. It's like, okay, but when you shoot an air ball, that's when you have to just suck it up and wait till you score the next bucket. And then you can say something. Byer, do you agree with that philosophy? That I'm not anti-trash talking, but just know.
Time and place.
Time and place.
Yes.
And his point was like, hey, scoreboard's all that matters. I was like, yeah, except for the fact that 40 points. But the bigger point is we'll do these things. where it's like Mario Cristobal, because he's not black, he can't yell at a player who clearly lacked the personal self-discipline in order to make the right play? Like, why? What if you think that's the proper way to teach a young person, like, they're going to have a much rougher life. Much rougher life. The best way to explain it is this. My college coach at Oklahoma State, the late, great Eddie Sutton, used to say, like, man, this is going to be the hardest thing you're ever going to do. Right? We'd have practice at 7 in the morning, 2-a-days in season, fully taped, getting after it, hour and a half, like, ugh, just the worst, right? And he would say, this is the hardest thing. And you know what? It's true. It's absolutely true. And where I have, when I have failed as a person, it's in my personal self-discipline, not any of that. It's not talent related at all. And that's what coaches coach. And I'm sure if you're Mario Cristobal and you're sitting there going like, hey, look, we're lucky we're playing a team that's not good enough to beat us. Right, that's the truth. Arizona's not good enough to beat him. But Oregon's not playing the season just to beat Arizona. They're playing the season to win the whole enchilada. That can legitimately happen. But it can't happen if you have mental errors or if you lack personal self-discipline. Whether it's Stanford next week or Cal in 3 weeks or, you know, when they play UCLA on October 23rd at the Rose Bowl. All of these things, I mean, it can cause something to go awry. So funny. I don't know anybody who looks at that thing and is like, oh, way over the top. Some people don't, they don't like yelling. I don't like yelling. You know what you probably shouldn't do? You probably shouldn't play high level sports. It's a lot of yelling. There's a bunch of guys. There's a yelling from the sideline. There's yelling from the stands. They're yelling in somebody's ear. And to get my point across, I got to yell. I know I get texts all the time. Like, what happened to your voice? Like, I was yelling over the weekend. Why are you yelling at kids? Because one, you're in a gym with like 9 games going on at once with whistles and bells, they can't hear you. And two, they don't actually listen otherwise. They just don't.
You know, Doug, it's another dynamic as well. Oregon and Ohio State obviously played a few weeks ago and Oregon won that game. And you look at what happened at Oregon, and then you look at what happened at Ohio State this past weekend when a player quit at halftime. And then Ryan Day after the game is being asked questions about, you know, is this a bigger problem within the program? And he said, no, this, you know, didn't feel that way. It seemed that this was an isolated incident. I think to your point of how the player from Oregon just even responded, and maybe it's more of a personal thing as well for that player, but when you're getting a butt chewing to stand there and take it, and to your point to say, yes, sir, understanding the situation that you were wrong and then how you react in that situation, I think says a lot as well about Oregon's program and where they are as a coach and where they are as a team, just to see how that young man responded to doing something wrong and then being criticized for it.
Completely agree. When you played football, and if people don't know, Byer was a DB. When you played, when I played as a kid, it was always yes or no, sir, with coaches in football. Like, I thought that was one of the things about football I always liked, is that it was always yes or no, sir, with coaches, right? And if you're, like, on the sideline, if you're not standing up, you're on one knee, right? You're on one knee. Your helmet's always on. Like, there's just certain football things that you just do.
Sure.
And it's like, look, in basketball, you do a lot of running. And you're like, why are we doing running? Like, we're not. It's like the whole Jamal Tinsley famously said when he got to Iowa State, like, man, I ain't no track team, right? But, like, the running and the getting there on time is teaching you personal self-discipline. It's teaching you work ethic. And, like, we used to draw on that all the time. Like, look, man, I know you're tired, but you think these dudes were up at 6 in the morning running out on the track, right? You think these guys had to do 5 and 5s? You think these guys had to do 25s, the hardest workout, like, you can ever do? And I'm sure everybody has their thing they do, but we used to draw on that. And it teaches you mental toughness. It teaches you self-discipline. So I do actually believe, and look, I'm not for over the top, you know, where you're almost bullying a kid, where he's into tears and he feels bad and he's over there on the sideline, you pull him out. I mean, like, look, if we really want to say old school, my dad coached with Ralph Miller at Oregon State, and he would have freshmen start the season. There's a kid named Ricky Berry. I don't know if you guys remember Ricky Berry. Ricky Berry was a star at San Jose State, but he started at Oregon State, transferred to San Jose State, then was a first-round draft pick of the Sacramento Kings. And this is like 30 years ago, maybe 35 years ago. He actually killed himself. He went through massive depression. But when he was at Oregon State as a freshman, Ralph Miller started him like the first month of the season. Then when he get mad at him, he benched him and then just sat him at the end of the bench and didn't talk to him for a month. You know, and like, he'll figure it out. And yeah, he figured out, I got to leave and transfer to San Jose State where he's an All-American. But the point is that there's all different ways to do it. You got to know the kid and you got to build a program with the type of leadership and discipline that you see best. And I'm not for over the top pointing in a kid's face, just riding him down the bench. And every time you come past him, MFing him, like that's too much. This did not appear anywhere near the line, let alone being over the line. Ramos, you want to get on this?
I was just going to say something as well. There also seems to be this point, Doug, where there's college athletes, like feel like I feel that they're being put in this blur, this gray area, because we could criticize pros and all the time, but we don't want to do it with high school athletes. Like you're not going to boo a kid that's playing high school. It's not going to happen. But even maybe with a little bit of the Spencer Rattler thing that we talked about, there seems to be this kind of gray area. But what I also think is gray is that even though you're 19 and 20 and 21 years old, maybe 18 years old and playing college sports, you're still 18, 19, 20, or 21. So you do know kind of, you know, there's things that you're still learning, but there is a little bit more responsibility. And that's why I point out, you know, to the kid, and the kid's going to remember it. I remember, Doug, I played high school basketball as well. My junior year, we practiced all week, denying ball, denying ball, denying ball. We played a game. I got a reach in foul because guess what I didn't do?
Deny the ball.
Deny the ball. And it was right in front of our bench. And I don't think that the coach is going to come out and do anything to me. But I still remember being yelled at, like screamed at, because we had worked on it all week and I didn't do what I was supposed to do.
Yeah,
I don't take it personally. It resonated with me.
No, you know? that's the how I have evolved coaching kids. And I coach pretty young kids. You know, like it started like 11s, 12 and 13s and 14-year-old kids is mostly what I coach. We have younger teens, but I'm a little much for them. And I'll coach them in practices. But you know, now I'm to the point where I'm like, I'm not going to yell at you unless I asked you and then told you and then told you again what to do and you still didn't do it. You know, it's funny you talk about denying the ball, right? There's different types of denial. There's like full face guard is the ball is here and my back is to you and I'm making you throw the ball over the top. And end of games, that's how we want to guard and we'll put a guy in as like a center fielder, right? And you call a timeout, like full face guard, don't let your guy catch, switch every screen, make him throw the ball over the top. They beat you long, that's fine. We got a guy there long. Don't guard the inbounds. And inevitably, every time, it's like, I got the, you're like, we're not guarding the inbounds. What am I here for? You know? Mm-hmm. What am I here for? But so that's when you have to kind of raise the level to the level of attention. And sometimes you got to wake them up because they're asleep. There's a lot of different elements to it, which I find amusing, and then I find concerning when there are guys who are legit football analysts who have spent their lives in the sport that apparently dismiss how hard it is to coach in a discipline like young men. Like, you remember when you were 17, like, we were all idiots, right? We were not thinking about the things that the coaches wanted us thinking about all the time. So, yes, Ramos, you want to get in? I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that what you just said about resonate with kids. You know, every coach knows their players more than the play-by-play announcer or the TV announcer knows. You know your players. When I coached high school softball, I knew what girls I could get on more as far as their defense or offense. I knew which girls I could back off more, and they get the same out of. Not every kid is the same. You can't treat them the same. You have an overall idea of how the team is run, and there's rules that the team has to apply by. But each individual player, as a coach, you know them better than anybody else knows, and you run it that way. And so when you said if Coach Cristobal knew that player, probably knew that he could say that to that player, and he got the respect back from that player, and that's more than anything that a TV play-by-play or a radio play-by-play can make some opinion about something he just sees randomly on the field.
Yeah, Rod Gilmore's response, I said, you know, Saban does this all the time. I don't care if Saban or any other coach does it. This is Rod Gilmore from ESPN. It makes it personal and embarrasses the kid and his family. Do that in private. Sit him on the bench publicly. Easier way to enforce team culture. Poll black coaches about this. He's making it clearly about race, but it is not. Okay? If that's how you want to discipline your team that way, you get your own team and you discipline them that way. But I've told you guys all preseason long, all season long, we ain't doing that pointing for a first down, spinning the football crap. We work way too hard to get a first down. Everybody else, 10 other guys, were blocking for you, and a quarterback throws you the ball, and then you ruin it by spinning the ball. Like when you've lectured time and again on it, and a guy doesn't do it, and you get onto him, you didn't embarrass the kid. The kid embarrassed the kid. You didn't embarrass his family. The kid embarrassed his family. Like we do all this thing and moving around, and like, no, sometimes you screw up. Sometimes you screw up. Sometimes you're going to be bad. That happens. You're just not good. Okay. Happens. That is going to happen. You are going to do something stupid. You know? But if you do it multiple times and you do it after a coach is... And this is a very controllable thing. Anyway. By the way, a big welcome in to our new affiliate. We got an FM, 93.5 and 1450 AM. This is in Jersey. Hello, Jersey! In New Brunswick, New Jersey. They're also the home of Rutgers football and basketball. Jack Myatt, thanks so much for putting us on air. We'll try not to screw it up. We do talk about sports most of the time. Occasionally, we did a great Springsteen segment, wasn't it? We probably shouldn't say what we said about Springsteen since we're on Jersey now, guys. But since we all admitted to not really being Springsteen guys, but that was one of the better segments we've done. I think I actually did I text all you guys or did I just text Beyer that I thought that was about as good a radio as we've done?
No, you sent the group text to the team and okay. We all concurred. It was a nice really segment. Good. It was organic and natural.
It was. It was organic and natural. A lot like a salad. Yeah. organic. I want to get to this Rams win. God, I watched a lot of football yesterday. Jay Stu, where'd you watch?
Where did I watch?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right in my living room.
Okay. What was your setup like?
I typically go for the poor man's sports bar look where you got the big screen with the Chargers, and then you got the red zone on a computer to the left, and yeah, then the CBS feed or Fox feed on the other one. So three screens at once.
You have your own three-screen thing, or do you do like a Jimmy-rigged only on Sunday, wires everywhere, computer three-screen?
Yeah, it's the latter. It's definitely a Sunday thing.
And then, Beyer, do you leave the baby and then come watch at work, or do you stay at home and watch and then drive in?
No, I've got my own setup, because I do the show actually from home as well.
We're giving away trade secrets.
I have three screens as well, but I have the NFL mix on one of the channels.
Here's the difference between Beyer and the rest of us. You had Ryder Cup on one of those screens.
That is correct. That is correct.
I was thinking of you when I tweeted that yesterday. I was like, how many screens would I have to get to get to Ryder Cup?
Well, there were nine games, eight of them on the mix, and Saints-Patriots wasn't on the mix, so I had to put Saints-Patriots on one of the TVs and then Ryder Cup on the other, so we were covered.
What a fascinating day in the NFL. All right, we'll get to it. Plus, I'll give you and I know we have Monday night tonight. I want to get to Dallas and Philly. Well, I'll give you our picks as well. But coming up next, Brady versus Belichick is going to dominate this week. And I'm going to have the best and probably deemed to be worst take on it. I think it's the best. And they'll have people go like, ratio, lame-o. But it's the best take. I'll get that for you next. But first, BetRivers Sportsbook wants to invite you to discover the complete sports betting experience. The foundation of that experience is a massive number of betting options on nearly every regulated sporting event around the world. Add on top of that, live streaming of sports every day. There's almost always a live match to watch on BetRivers Sportsbook right on your phone. BetRivers features top-tier customer service ready to answer your questions anytime, day or night. Plus, with unique rush pay system, BetRivers Sportsbook can authorize most withdrawal requests instantly. Customer satisfaction is always the number one priority, and BetRivers will match your first deposit up to $250. Now, unlike some other sportsbooks, BetRivers only requires a one-time pay-through.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.
It's Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Let's welcome in Joel Klatt. He joins us. What was that like in Chicago where you have so many Subway alums and so many Big Ten fans. That seemed like a hell of a spot to be. What was that like to call that game?
It was as unique a game as I remember calling. That's my first time in Soldier Field, actually. And I was struck by how intimate it is and small it actually is. Kind of fans right on top of you. It's not huge. I think there's just over 60,000. But it was a great environment. Absolutely a great environment. Wisconsin fans are terrific. The Notre Dame fans were terrific. Obviously a ton of them there. And then the game turned out, I thought, to be a great game. I mean, obviously the score looks like it's a total blowout, but that was a great game through basically 3.5 quarters.
What happened?
Well, the bottom line is that Wisconsin's offense cannot get out of its own way. And that is a team that has a defense that's playing top 10 caliber defense and an offense that is playing, I mean, as bad as any out there, just no detail whatsoever. They make massive mistakes. They've got penalties from veteran players, pre-snap, false starts, holding calls on veteran offensive linemen on first down. They get behind the chains, and they have an inability to play offense when you dictate to them what they need to do. If they're off schedule, if they're one-dimensional, they cannot play offense. And Notre Dame did that. And really, it was the kick return. So, Doug, the key play, and I know everyone's going to talk about, man, Mertz had so many interceptions and this or that. The key play is that when Wisconsin took control of the game, and yes, 13-10 is control of the game with that defense, they can basically squeeze the life out of you at that point with their defense, in particular with the backup quarterback in for Notre Dame, Pine. And then they allow a kick return for a touchdown. So Chris Tyree's touchdown on that kick return, that's the ball game. And then immediately they go out there again. That one of those penalties on first down, they end up fumbling. Notre Dame takes advantage, and then the momentum just spiraled away from them. But the lack of detail and execution on that offense is pretty staggering, to be honest with you.
What do you think Notre Dame should do at quarterback?
Well, I think Pine, while it was a great story, Doug, he still is not the guy that's going to give you the best chance to win over the course of four quarters. I mean, he did great, and there were a lot of things that he did well. But let's make no mistake about it. The reason they were in position to win the game is because Jack Cohn played like an absolute warrior. The game plan for him going in was that he was going to throw it 40 to 45 times. Any run game from Notre Dame was going to be a token run game because of the stellar front seven for the Badgers. And Cohn did that for the most part. I mean, he was playing a heck of a game and had them right there for that moment when in the fourth quarter they could, you know, obviously take control of the game. But the other part of it is that they knew he was going to get sacked a few times because of the developmental nature of their offensive line. He knew it. That takes an immense amount of fortitude, Doug, to sit in there. Trust me when I tell you this. I've played behind poor offensive lines, and I've played against teams like Miami and Texas and Oklahoma in those games. And you walk onto the field, and you take a deep breath, and you're like, all right, this is going to hurt. This is going to hurt a lot. And Cohn hung in there, and I thought he put them in position for – that fourth quarter run. So I'm still in the camp that he needs to be the quarterback. I think that they're best when he's their quarterback, and then they're best when he can then hand over the reins in the run game to Buckner, who comes in when he's healthy, and then he can be the change of pace at quarterback.
Joel Klatt joins us in the Doug Gottlieb Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Now, technically, Texas A&M last year, 9-1, 8-1 in SEC play, and they won the Orange Bowl. But most people take last year and kind of throw it away, a little bit of a different year. But let's let the Aggies have their great year. This was supposed to be the year, right? Jimbo's in year four. These are all his recruits. He got another contract extension. Alabama's young can be had. And, you know, this. But you and I, we're Big 12 dudes. We remember that it was like the third year of the Big 12, they won the league. Lost in the Sugar Bowl. And outside of that, they're somewhere between 5 and 3 wins in conference every year. What happened to the Aggies in Dallas, or actually in Arlington, against the Razorbacks on Saturday?
Well, they just got beat up. And they haven't played to the level that we thought or anticipated they would play to all year. This is a team that played a one-possession game against Colorado. That same Colorado team went out the next week and got beat 30-0 by Minnesota, who then just went out last week and got beat by whom? Bowling Green? Who was it?
Yeah, I can't. Bowling Green.
Bowling Green was a 30-point dog in that game.
We were watching the game, and I was explaining to my son, no, it's not Bowling Green, Kentucky. That's Bowling Green, Ohio. I was like, how many Bowling Greens are there? I go, I don't know. Not as many as Springfield. How many Springfields are there? A lot. I don't know. Anyway,
a lot. That's right. So, you know, this is a team that has massively underachieved so far. And Kent State, they didn't look great. They were tied in that one, you know, going into the second half. 10-7 against Colorado. New Mexico, their offense still sputtering a little bit. And then clearly their offensive woes in the 20-10 loss to Arkansas. Now, I think Arkansas is pretty good, but there is an issue with Texas A&M, and the issue lies on the offensive side. They're only averaging 23 points a game. That's not going to cut it. Their passing offense is not nearly what it needs to be. When you look at this team, we all thought, and I anticipated this, Doug, I thought that they were going to be very good. I thought that they were going to be able to run the ball. I thought that they were going to be able to play great defense and bring a young quarterback along. And granted, he got injured, Hayes King, but Calzada has just not been the answer. And I know you and I'm sure you get a lot of Aggie fan ire, as I do as well, for pointing out the simple fact that they have throughout, save for a year here and there, and this is not all that dissimilar to a lot of programs, but Texas A&M wants to view themselves as some sort of blue blood, highly successful year in and year out program. That's not the case. They weren't that in the Big 12. They were a middling program in the Big 12, save for a couple of years. They've been a middling program in the SEC, save for a couple of years. They are who they have been for a number of years, 20, 30 years right now. So I guess we shouldn't have expected anything different.
You know who A&M is? A&M's the guy in basketball or in football. Like in football, he shows up. He's got the new cleats. He's got the gold mouthpiece. He's got the visor, the tinted visor. He's got the back pad, right? I mean, looks the part. You're like, man, that guy looks pretty good. And then you watch him play. He's like, got all the expensive stuff. Just not necessarily the stuff that matters. That really.
And I couldn't agree with you more. And it happens in every sport. He's the guy that shows up in J's but can't shoot a J.
Yes. Yes. No question. Have you seen this Mario Cristobal video?
Yeah, I have.
I won't paint you any. What are your thoughts when you see him getting on a wide receiver for spinning a football in his fifth catch of the season? When they get a first down,
I might get in trouble for this. I found nothing wrong with it whatsoever. That's standards have to be held by somebody. We are so soft as a culture, so soft. Social media has made us immensely soft as a culture, and everybody wants to be a victim of something in our culture. Everybody. This is a kid making a mistake, mental mistake, in which you are going to get your butt chewed. I don't care if it's Tuesday and no one's around, or if it's Saturday and there's 57,000 in the stands at Austin Stadium, you're going to get it. If you're a program worth your salt at all, you're going to have standards, and somebody has to hold those standards. And at many times, those standards have to be set and held by the head coach. This guy, Mario Cristobal, is the son of Cuban immigrants. His dad, every single night when they sat down to dinner, he explained it to me as it was a reckoning of what I had done that day. Did I take care of my jobs that day? A reckoning. That's his background. He coaches for Nick Saban. His background is a reckoning every day. Yeah. It's not a slap it on the butt and say, hey, you'll be okay. Like, that's not the type of program that he's trying to build. And my favorite part of the video, and forgive me for not knowing his name. Why don't I know the kid's name? Because I just did their game, but I'm terrible with names. He looked at him dead in the eye, didn't quiver, didn't shout back, and he said, yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Yep.
To me, that's great. That is a great moment. And guess what? It didn't go on from that. He threw his headset, screamed at him. Kid said, yes, sir, and they both walk away. Point was made. Point was taken. That's quality coaching. Sometimes it's hard, folks. Maybe we shouldn't be so soft.
Yeah. And oh yeah, by the way, first of all, you don't have to say pretty please when you're coaching. You just don't. I mean, that's part of it. It's also, it's loud, it's intense, and all the other kids, Chris Hudson, by the way, is the kid's name.
There you go.
You know, who's a, he, look, he's a freshman from Compton. Like, I guarantee that's the last time he does it. You know?
Exactly.
That's it. Problem solved.
What's the last point of that interaction? To prevent him from doing that again?
No, to prevent everybody else from doing it again. Right?
Excellent point. That's an excellent point. If people think that it's always just interpersonal relationships on football teams or teams in general, you're wrong. Sometimes you have to make a point for the team at the expense of one guy, and that might be it. But guess what? That's what it is. I mean, Doug, anybody that has played the game at a high level at all has been absolutely undressed in front of their teammates or fans or both at one point in their career.
Correct.
It's just happened.
Correct.
So why, like, I don't understand it. I really don't. Oh, he shouldn't have done that. Done what?
Here's the, you and I are lockstep in this. You're not going to get in trouble for it because we're on the right side of it. And most every coach, Rod Gilmore was the announcer, and he thought it was too much. And he and I got into it on Twitter, and it's not close to it. But here is the part about the treatment of players. Okay, let's go to Spencer Rattler. Hasn't played nearly up to his billing. Oklahoma survives West Virginia. Now, I understand that fans feel more empowered to say whatever they want to say, even more now than when you and I played. It started with message boards. It moves to social media. And now these kids are basically paid professionals, right, with name, image, and likeness. And so the switch in people's brains switched to, I can say whatever I want to say for this kid because he's no longer a college kid. He's a professional playing with my college's logo. They start chanting for the backup by name? Like, I've been around this a long time. You've called games. You've played it a long time. Have you ever heard somebody chanting the backup's name of a starting quarterback who, by the way, started the year as the Heisman favorite?
No, I think it was mostly students from what I understand. And I think that they're probably very immature, right? Like, Oklahoma fans are better than this. I think you would agree with that.
No, they're not. And they're great fans. They support their team. No, they're not. Now, do I think they're better than chanting the backup's name? Yes. Now, they'll go on the local sports shows and be like, hey, we need to get Caleb up and Caleb ready to see what he can do, right? But I would say, if you're telling me they're better than students chanting the name, yes. Why would anybody want to go to play for a school? You want to go recruit in the SEC? Like, you want to go play for somebody when you start playing poorly, they start chanting for your backup? Like, dude, no thanks.
I think that it is a great fan base that has become entitled. A sector of them has become entitled. They support their team, and through that support, they demand excellence. Now, they're not smart about it, because the reality is that you could put Patrick Mahomes behind that offensive line right now, and it wouldn't be much better, because the problem is not Spencer Rattler. I watched last night every snap from that game on the coach's film. And, Doug, the offensive line for Oklahoma should be embarrassed. They should all be putting "I'm sorry" notes in Spencer Rattler's locker, because this guy is bearing the brunt of the fans' frustration for the offense when the offense's problem is the five guys up front. They were awful. I'm not going to mince any words about it. They were awful. And this kid's going to have to hear his backup name. Like, put Caleb Williams in there. And guess what he's going to see? Akeem Mezidor, number 90, unblocked again. Because there's four whiffs in the first 15 plays, and Akeem Mezidor is in the lap of Spencer Rattler or in the lap of Eric Gray. I charted the plays, and in the first 29 plays, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 plays in the first 29 of the game where the offensive line, it's not just like, oh, didn't do their job. Total breakdown, runs and passes. Total breakdown. Spencer Rattler had no shot in that game to play anywhere close to his ability or his potential. And it's because of those five guys up front that have played putrid football as of so far in this season. And I feel bad for Rattler, because he actually made a couple of nice throws. And then on other plays, he's forced into positions that there's just no chance. None whatsoever. So that's why I bristle at his backup being chanted for. It's like, hey, fans, don't be stupid. Why don't you chant for the backup offensive lineman? You know, so, like, listen, I think it's a great fan base. They support their team as well as anybody across the country. I think a sector of them have become somewhat entitled. And if they're going to fix themselves at all as a program, it has to start up front because that offensive line was awful.
All right. I do agree it's a great fan base. They've been entitled for a long, long time, brother.
What happens when you win at the level that they've won.
Okay. Michigan, you got them this weekend, right? You got them against Wisconsin. They go to Camp Randall. They go to this Michigan schedule. Go to Wisconsin, go to Nebraska, Northwestern at home, go to Michigan State, Indiana at home, go to Penn State, go to Maryland, then Ohio State. And can they throw a forward pass? Like, this is the craziest thing. You got a guy who's supposed to be the quarterback guru, can't settle on a quarterback. Now they don't even try. Now they're just going to run it and play on their defense.
It's bizarre. It's beyond bizarre. I mean, they've got a 5-star quarterback that's their backup, not saying that he should play. Cade McNamara, their actual quarterback, 4-star quarterback, number 7 overall quarterback in his class, 2-time Gatorade Nevada Player of the Year. Guy came in, lit up Rutgers when they were down by 17 last year to come back. I think the injury to Ronnie Bell on the outside has made it really tough for them. He was their best wide receiver, and I think that really makes it tough. They only completed one ball in the second half last week.
For seven yards.
It's staggering. And listen, rest assured, they will not be able to just run the football on Wisconsin. That is not afforded you. I just talked about it a little bit earlier, that Jack Cohn, his game plan, Notre Dame's game plan was for him to throw 40, 45 times because Wisconsin was going to stop them running the ball. They can't run the ball. I think Michigan, at best, could run the ball for about 85, 90, 95 yards in this game. And they're going to have to do something on the outside. They're going to have to find some way to throw the ball more efficiently. Now, he had some big plays, explosive plays in the first half. And they've got to find ways to duplicate that here going forward.
This should be exciting. Might be a little underwhelming. Joel Klatt, who'll be alongside Gus. Michigan at Wisconsin. Camp Randall, 5th quarter, noon kickoff. On Fox. Great stuff, dude. Thanks for joining us.
I love it. Have a good one, Doug. See you, bud.
Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Okay. Brady or Belichick? Buyer, where are you? Brady or Belichick?
I've always been on the side of Belichick on this one, so I'll stick with Belichick.
Okay. Jay Stu, where are you? Brady or Belichick?
I'm going to be on Brady's side on this one.
Okay. John Ramos? You just saw Tom Brady in person, or you didn't see him in person?
But I jumped the gun there. I did not see him in person.
Do you want to go to a Rams game?
I do.
Okay, why don't you tell me when you want to go to a Rams game, and I will take care of you.
Okay.
Okay? You want to bring Suzanne? You want to bring your kid? I'll take care of you.
It would be my SoFi.
Yeah, I'm in SoFi.
Okay. Okay.
I'm not gonna do like you haven't been on a plane in 20 years, John. I'm not gonna say, John. Here, good news is I'm gonna send you the Rams Packers game. Bad news is you have to fly across the country or get in the wagon.
Honey, we're off to Green Bay.
Yes, I would love to go to Green Bay. That's gonna be a great game. Okay, so
I'll take Brady. I became a big fan of Brady after the last Super Bowl with Tampa Bay because I think people just continue to jump on his back, and the guy actually like continues to win. So I'll take Brady on this one.
Tom Brady is an amazing player, okay? He is an amazing, amazing player. And Bill Belichick is an amazing coach. And here's the definitive. You don't need to go anywhere else. And if you do, this might not be the show for you. And it doesn't mean that somebody's opinion who gives it on the show isn't valid. Like all these guys, you have your opinion. I get it. Okay? But, I mean, no coach has ever done it without players. Nobody's ever done it without players. But if you think that any coach can do it, give me the all-time great player. And I will show you, likely, if they won more than one, the all-time great coaches that's behind them. Right? Like, Michael Jordan played for a couple other coaches, and Doug Collins is a really good coach. But Phil Jackson was the first guy to have the balls to go, hey, dude, we're going to take you off the ball some, roll you into the post, play it in the triangle, make you move the basketball. Shaq and Kobe were together for, 4 years? And every year it would end the same, right? And fighting over the basketball. Call in Phil Jackson, and that changed. Joe Montana played for Bill Walsh, who is the architect of the greatest offense in the last 30 years in the NFL in terms of consistency of productivity and how many times it's been copied 10 times over. Like, if you don't think there's something to Bill Belichick, who took over his first year he takes over, okay, they win 5 games. His second year with Brady, he won a Super Bowl, they won 11, a 6-game improvement. And if you think that was, like, a lot of it was Brady, he was a really good player, but he was just, like, don't lose him the game. And what you got to keep in mind when Brady was actually at his peak athletically, they didn't win a Super Bowl. I remember they add Randy Moss, they win 16 games. They win 18 and get all the way to the Super Bowl, lose to the Giants, then Brady gets hurt. So Matt Castle's starting quarterback. By the way, they still won 11 games with Matt Castle. This is what they did with Castle, with Brady, up until last year. And even last year, winning 7 games with 8 opt-outs and losing the greatest quarterback in franchise history, the winningest quarterback in NFL history. 5 wins, 11, 9 wins. And by the way, Brady was the quarterback the year they won 9 wins in 2002. Okay. That was after their first Super Bowl. 14, 14, 10, 12, 16, 11, 10, 14, 3, 13, 12, 12, 12, 12, 14, 13, 11, 12. By the way, go look at the defensive rankings from any of those years. Were there some years where the defense wasn't great? Absolutely. But for the most part, the defense, when they were winning, was a top 5 defense. You know, their first three Super Bowls, right? Their points allowed in the NFL were 6th, best, and 2nd best. That's why they won. When they finally won a fourth Super Bowl in 2014, you know, was Brady a huge part of it? Yes. Their defense, in points allowed per game, it was they were 8th. In total yards gained, they were 2nd. It goes hand in hand. So the clear answer is both. And yeah, Tom Brady was awesome last year, and he may be a little less awesome this year. And I don't put the blame on, like, I could have told you I saw this thing coming. When you have a bunch of guys, an organization that's never won before, a head coach that's never won before, they're not just all going to be able to follow the lead of Tom Brady after winning because he's so used to continue to just do his job and be the same. For his life didn't change at all. Everybody else's life, complete change. All those other guys went from has-beens or maybe they won one somewhere else to now you're a champion. Tom Brady, he won a bunch before he got there. He won 6 before he got there. He won his 7th. Nothing's changed. People call him the GOAT before. People call him the GOAT after. Not zero has changed. But you don't know how that's going to affect the coaches, the players, the front office, the fans. Everybody changes with that amount of success when you haven't had the success before. You know who didn't change and was able to be consistently successful? That's right, Bill Belichick. I didn't say Bill Belichick was more important than his players, but Bill Belichick found a way to manage all those players for a long time. Salary caps, egos, getting to play together, getting to play hard. And if Mac Jones, who didn't play well yesterday, if Mac Jones ends up becoming the guy, I think even more of Belichick. You know how hard it is to replace a superstar, all-time great quarterback? Yes, Green Bay did it with Rodgers replacing Favre. Yes, Steve Young did it replacing Joe Montana. But both ticked off the other guy, whereas they couldn't leave Jimmy Garoppolo to be the guy in New England. The salary cap contracts didn't work, and neither of the egos would allow it. The only answer you should really have in the middle is the exact middle. Become a radical centrist just like me. Is Tom Brady awesome? Yes. His fatal flaw is if he gets somebody kind of at his feet and he's not comfortable in that pocket, he can sometimes not be great. Is Bill Belichick great? Yes. His fatal flaw is, you know, he can't really evaluate the wide receiver position. He's okay out of the draft. Unbelievable in the waiver wire and at developing guys and finding what he wants in players. Six Super Bowls, Brady or Belichick, there's two possible answers. Both or yes. Otherwise, you're picking a side, which I don't think there's a clear and decisive winner. It's not close.